Here's your 3 o'clock news roundup, Earl Moseman reporting. Congress had a busy day today. To start with, Republican Senator Robert Taft says that congressional conferees from both houses are in agreement on nearly all provisions of a compromise labor disputes bill. But there are 2 technical issues on which they so far have failed to get together. In the upper chambers of Congress, the Senate has voted down an amendment to the tax reduction bill that would have increased exemptions for both single persons and married couples. By a vote of 44-27, the Senate rejected a proposal by Senator John McClellan of Arkansas to boost the personal exemption for single persons to $750 from the present $500 figure. The proposal also would have raised the exemption to $1,500 for a man and wife instead of the $1,000 currently allowed. McClellan estimated that the amendment, if approved, would have cut federal income by $3 billion a year and would have eliminated 8 to 9 million taxpayers. The Senate also turned down a proposal to recognize family partnerships for federal tax purposes. The plan was rejected by a vote of 54-29. The appointment of Robert A. Lovett as Undersecretary of State has received unanimous approval by the Senate. Lovett will succeed Dean Acheson, who resigned recently to enter private business. The new Undersecretary formerly was Assistant Secretary of War. And Secretary of State Marshall appeared today before a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee to urge its approval of the St. Lawrence Seaway. He told the legislators that completion of the huge project would be a great help to American and Canadian defense of the continent. Incidentally, Marshall went from the committee room to a courtroom in Washington to appear as a defense witness in the war bribe trial of ex-Congressman Andrew May. In his 15 minutes on the stand, the Secretary declared that in 1945, when May is said to have protested a reduction in the ammunition contract held by the Garson brothers, the Army was making very heavy cutbacks in ammunition orders. Another Senate subcommittee picked up its investigation of alleged kickbacks in the sale of steel. A Brooklyn exporter charged today that Pittsburgh broker E.A. Hirschbaumer is as guilty of the so-called gray market in steel as the man he accuses. The witness, James Boyle, denied drawing a gun on Kirschbaumer in an effort to get him to give up 248,000 tons of gray market steel. Boyle asserted that he didn't even see the broker last February, the time the Pittsburgh man testified guns were produced during a conference at a New York hotel. Boyle declared he does not know why Kirschbaumer made such a statement to the subcommittee last week. He added, "I believe the man is a psychopathic case." Earlier, 2 handwriting experts testified on a letter which is the key document in the $50 million steel transaction. Both experts described it as a forgery. The letter was given to Kirschbaumer by Herbert Karp. Karp is a major witness in the investigation who was subpoenaed by the committee 9 days ago, but who so far has not shown up to testify. The letter, allegedly signed by A.R. Zapp, an employee of the Firth Sterling Company of McKesport, Pennsylvania, promised the firm would deliver 248,000 tons of sheet steel, but handwriting analysis said the signature was not that of Zapp. They just don't know who signed the letter. The company's president, Gerald Firth, disclaimed the order, declaring that his plants never made steel sheets, never had made them, and never handled them. The House Committee on Un-American Activities has been told by 2 of its members that some of the most flagrant communist propaganda films had been produced as a result of White House pressure. However, a report by a subcommittee did not say who occupied the White House at the time the films were produced. And now here are 2 or 3 messages from my sponsors. Well, finally, mothers, we have an answer to your breakfast problems. Shredded wheat. Yes, I know it's difficult at times to get those lively little ones of yours to sit down long enough to eat a good breakfast, but when you serve them those delicious biscuits of shredded wheat with milk or cream, you'll be amazed. And not only will the children delight in eating shredded wheat, but the whole family as well. So start the day the happy way with shredded wheat. Ladies, you know what a thrill it is to have fruit come into your kitchen at canning time, lush ripe. Well, just imagine what Libby's California kitchens are like at fruit cocktail time. In come the juicy peaches, Bartlett pears, the sweet, especially tender seedless grapes. That's the type of fruit Libby uses in making fruit cocktail. And then to add tang, they add Hawaiian pineapple. And for richness, ruby red maraschino cherries. There's a fruit cocktail that everybody likes. For perfection in a fruit cocktail, it's always Libby's. Are you unlucky with pies, ladies? Or you are? Why, then use Crisco, because Crisco's new method entirely eliminates pie-making worries. In Crisco, there's a special success secret you don't get in any other shortening. And now Crisco's new method ends those old bugaboos guessing how much water to add, and sticky, hard-to-handle dough. Crisco guarantees you flaky, tender pie crust all the time. Yes, Crisco does more for your cooking. Try Crisco cakes. They're lighter. Trust Crisco for delicious, digestible fried foods, too. All right, Junior, I know you want your Ovaltine, but please, wait a minute. Yes, it's a fact. Children actually rush home from school or play just to have that all-refreshing glass of Ovaltine because it contains all the vital food elements for growing children. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to talk football this afternoon. The annual spring game tomorrow afternoon in the stadium will wind up spring training for the 1947 Gopher squad. One of the largest in history, the squad has been handicapped by unusually bad weather, which kept the Gritters in the fieldhouse for weeks. The last two Saturdays have seen the Maroons and the Goals square off in afternoon scrimmages, with each squad taking one win. Well, tomorrow's game will bring the two clubs together for the third and final time, and believe me, it's going to be one swell ball game. Well, there are a lot of angles to the football situation, but I can't think of anyone closer to the situation than head coach Bernie Bierman. Many think that the Gophers under Bierman will continue to climb up the conference ladder, as indicated by the way in which they took the last three conference games last fall. Others, including Coach Bierman himself, tend to think the 1947 edition of the Golden Gophers will be a second division team. We hope that the second group is wrong. Well, at any rate, here, recorded from his offices in Cook Hall, is Bernie Bierman with the answers to some questions on the coming football season.
Well, Mr. Bierman, we're naturally interested in the 1947 football squad as it now stands after some 6 weeks of spring training. We know that you lost many valuable days because the weather kept you inside. It was nearly the middle of April before you got outside, wasn't it?
Yes, and just about the middle of April before we could have any outdoor work.
Has the overall development of the squad been slowed down because of the poor weather this spring?
Well, we naturally got a late start, and that slowed it down some, but we've made some progress all right.
Fine. With the type of football you teach here at Minnesota, I suppose a good spring training session is vital. Why is it so important, and what type of work do you stress in these spring workouts?
Well, most of the players we get here come here in a rather raw and undeveloped state, so it's necessary to have quite a lot of work to teach them what the game of football is all about. So far as our work this spring is concerned, we try to cover the whole map. But, of course, we can't cover everything in the spring, so we concentrate on the development of individuals more than on the teamwork.
And you leave the team play for the early fall season when the boys come back in August.
Yes, that's what we do.
Do you find, Mr. Bierman, that the boys seem to have a harder time really socking out there in the spring training than they do during the fall season scrimmages?
Well, it's only natural that they should, because in the fall, games coming up, they're keyed up a little bit more. And naturally, things have to be somewhat flatter in the spring.
And generally, except for this spring, I suppose the weather is a little bit warmer during spring training than it is in the fall.
Well, the warm weather never bothers us in this country.
No, I guess it doesn't. Do you find that a few of your players will come back this fall much improved over what they were in spring practice through individual development during the summer?
Well, we hope so. We're going to be out of luck if that isn't true.
I suppose many of them will go out and work on passing, kicking, and individual performances. Well, shifting now to a little general talk about conference football this coming fall, can we look for anything new in either offense or defense from Big Nine opponents?
Well, that's pretty hard to say just exactly how the development will go. There undoubtedly is going to be some new developments in both offense and defense.
Have you found that the T-formation, which has been so popular, is losing any of its early popularity?
Well, not necessarily. It's still traveling both ways. There still are a lot of teams who have been using other types of football going over the T, and some using T are going back to the other. But the general trend at the present time is to use some T and some other type of formation combined.
Well, I don't want you to give away any trade secrets, but will we be using the T to any extent this fall, or will it be strictly single wing?
Well, we'll be ready to go on some T formation stuff, but we don't know to what extent it'll be used.
With the extra speed that I understand we have this fall, I suppose that T will be a little bit easier to use than in some of the earlier years.
Well, we don't have a great deal of speed. That's one of the problems that we have.
I see, how about these newfangled defenses? Some of the teams used last year, five-man line, even down to a three-man line, with the rest of the team scattered out behind in a variety of patterns. Do you think they will go on with that idea?
Yes, I think we'll see quite a lot of variation in defensive setups.
And all designed to stop these new offensive formations.
Yes, that's the idea.
Well, all conference competition, of course, will be tough this year. Who do you put at the top of the list from present indications?
Well, it's hard to estimate at the present time with any accuracy, but all indications point to the fact that Michigan will be at the top of the heap. Ohio State also looks very good, Illinois again, and Iowa appears to be very good.
Mm-hmm. Would you venture a guess as to where Minnesota might come out?
Well, we hope that it'll be pretty good, but all logic would say that we still will be a second division team next year.
Perhaps a year away from getting up in there where we'd like to be. Getting back to this annual spring game tomorrow afternoon in the stadium, of course, it'll be the Maroons against the Golds. Who'll be handling the coaching duties for each squad?
Well, George Hauser and John Ronning will have the Maroons, and Dale Ward and George Swenson will be handling the Golds.
Uh-huh. And where will you be doing all this?
Well, I'll be wandering around quite a lot, and probably we'll be spending some time up in the press box.
Uh-huh. I understand that you go up there, you can get a better overall picture of how each squad is doing out there in the spring game. And the pictures are going to be taken, too, isn't that right?
Yes, we'll take pictures.
Uh-huh. Joe Brain will be up with his camera for complete picture coverage. I understand that because the squads, the Maroons and Golds, have been divided now for something like 3 weeks and have been practicing more or less alone, that there's keener rivalry than ever before in these spring games.
Well, this is a sort of a rubber game. 2 weeks ago, the Maroons licked the Golds 26-8, and last Saturday, the other way around, the Maroons licked the Golds 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And last Saturday, the Golds turned around and licked the Maroons 33-19.
So they'll really be out for blood on this one. Will you be using the 40 plays per quarter system or the regular time system?
No, the game tomorrow will be played in regulation game in all respects.
Mm-hmm. Fine. There'll be numbers on the players so that the public will know exactly
who's
going.
Yes, they all will be numbered.
Fine. Well, getting down to personalities, Mr. Birman, what men from last year's B team have shown the most improvement to date?
Well, that's pretty hard to say. Ropeman has come a long way since last fall. Glenn Pullins, I think, has come a long way since last fall.
Mm-hmm. And Ropeman is a tackle?
Yes, either a tackle or a guard.
And, of course, Pullins is playing right now at right halfback. Well, for the squad as a whole, your varsity squad, what positions appear to be the strongest so far this spring?
Well, I think that... when you think of strength, we aren't extremely strong in any spot, but we have sufficient depth in all of the spots, but quality is sadly lacking in some of them.
Mm-hmm.
We will have to do some juggling around with positions over what we've been doing this spring in order to get everything ironed out for next fall.
Do you have any necessarily weak spots? Are there any that are more so than any others?
Well, we haven't any large fullbacks on the squad. Although we have quite a number of fullbacks, it should be playing good, strong ball.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Birman, I'm going to be out there for tomorrow's game, and I imagine we'll have several thousand fans out to watch the first public showing of your Gophers. Is there anything special to watch for in tomorrow's game?
Well, I imagine the most interesting thing is the personnel angle of the thing, to watch how various individuals are operating out there. The game probably will not be as smooth as we expect football to be in the fall, but we do expect a good deal of hard socking out there.
Mm-hmm. Have you uncovered any boys that can pass this year? We've needed a good passer around here for several years. Will we see a lot of passing tomorrow?
Well, there'll be quite a lot of passing, but no new passers have shown up. Of course, it must be remembered that our squad this year is just really the leftovers of last year. There have only been two new men added, and we've lost about half the entire squad that we had available in 46.
Well, one final question, Mr. Birman. It looks sunny out right now, but you never know around here. What kind of weather did you order for tomorrow?
Well, we'd like to have it sunny and not too much wind, but we're not at all confident that we'll get it.
No, not around this country, I guess. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Birman. I know that if the weather is right, we'll see a fine exhibition of football on Northrop Field tomorrow. And if past scrimmages are any indication, there'll be plenty of scoring. Remember, fans, the game is open to the public and it gets underway at 2 o'clock. Our interview this afternoon has been with...
Let's run over the lineups for that game tomorrow. These are just tentative lineups and may be switched at the last minute, depending, of course, on which team does the kicking. For the Maroon, an outfit made up largely of last year's veterans, it'll be Gordy Soltaw and Larry Hollenkamp at the ends, Bill Carroll and Al Markert at tackles, at the guards, Leo Nomolini and Don Holker, and at center, of course, Captain Steve Silianoff. The all-veteran backfield will have Bill Elliott at full, Billy Bye and Walt Hoskin at halves, and Bill Thiel at quarter. There's just one name there not familiar to football followers, and that's Al Markert at tackle. He's a boy who has stepped into the starting assignment at tackle and may give Dean Widseth a run for that position come fall practice. Dean is currently with the track team, tossing the discus, and won't have much of a chance to say who's going to play left tackle until he reports for practice in late August. Of the others in the Maroon lineup, all are either starters from last year or were in most of the games during the season. Walt Hoskin may be a newcomer to some of you, though, because he played in about two games and then hit bad luck in the form of a leg injury and sat out the rest of the season on the bench. You may remember him, though, as the halfback who stole the show in the all-star high school football game last summer in the stadium. So he's just a sophomore now and appears to be ready to play first-string right half any time Dierman gives him the word. For the goals, it'll be Jim Dierman at left end, and that name isn't a coincidence. He is Bernie Berman's son, and according to the other boys on the squad, a whale of a ball player. Jack Stuhlman will take over the weak side end, flanked by Buster Mealy at right tackle. At left tackle, it'll be Floyd Jasuski, another newcomer to go for followers. At the guards, there'll be one veteran and one newcomer, Chuck DeLego, the veteran, and Harry Hendrickson, the newcomer. DeLego is the lad who saw action in exactly one play last fall. Here's the way it happened. In the opening game against Nebraska, he ran down the field under the opening kickoff, tried to move a blocker out of his way, and wound up with a broken leg, which sidelined him for the rest of the season. Howie Brennan, playing center for the goals, will try to see to it that the ball gets back to Ralph McAllister or Glenn Pullins at the halves. And at fullback for the goals, chunky Don Johnson will carry the mail, and sophomore Jim Malosky will run the team from his quarterback spot. With the exception of DeLego, Mealy, McAllister, and Malosky, none of the other goal starters has seen any varsity service, and when substitutions begin pouring in for the goals, they'll be taken largely from former B-squad members. So it stacks up with the battle between the veterans of last year and the undefeated B team that was coached by John Ronning. For those of you going over to the game tomorrow, here's a hint. Be on the lookout, first of all, for a wide-open reverse with Glenn Pullins carrying the ball. You probably saw the pictures of the Rose Bowl game in which Buddy Young made the defense look silly with his brilliant speed and a weak side reverse. Well, Pullins is capable of doing the same thing and has done so in previous Saturday scrimmages. He runs like a proverbial deer, and once he's out in the open, it's a wish he's gone. Last year, he was weak on tackling and in following his interference. It's going to be interesting to see if his year of seasoning with the B-squad has improved his play in these two vital categories. Watch also the passing of Billy Bye. He always has been a fair passer, lacking mostly in height. He doesn't throw a hard ball, but it's accurate and gets there in most cases ahead of the defense man. You've probably read, too, about Bruce Doherty, who'll be playing for the Gold. On numerous occasions during spring practice, he's broken loose from scrimmage and gone all the way. And he may do the same tomorrow, so watch him. Well, quite an affair that game tomorrow is going to be, too. It'll have all the color and atmosphere of the regular fall game. First of all, Phil Brain's Cook Hall scoreboard and public address system will be in operation with the familiar voice of Julie Pearl echoing over the field. Phil Brain, who divides his time between his duties as tennis coach and official photographer, will catch the complete game on 16-millimeter film from his favorite stand atop the press booth on the south side of the stadium. Programs listing players, numbers, and positions will be passed out at the points of entry. And to make sure that we have a real football atmosphere, the band will be on hand. As we've said before, the game is open to the public. The fee, $1. Tickets are on sale at the downtown ticket office in Minneapolis, Field Schlick in St. Paul, and at Cook Hall. There'll be no reserved seats, but I'm sure you won't have to worry about getting a good seat. Now, if there's anything about the game that we haven't covered, I don't know what it is, except, oh yes, the score? Well, we'll let you know about that next week. How's that? Well, that about winds up the sporting page for today. Next week, we'll have another interview with the campus sports personality and the latest news from the campus world of sports. Until then, this is Earl Moseman saying so long until next Friday at 4:45.
All right, ready for the kickoff. Here it comes. It's Gordy Soltaw. The goal's kicking. A very nice kicking coming way down here to number 7. Billy Bye takes it on his own goal line, coming up fast to the 15, the 20, and is spilled hard on the 21-yard line on the far side of the field, which would be the south side. A very nice kick-off time. Went way down beyond the goal line, about halfway between the goal line and the goal post. Bye took that ball in his arms and got up to, we'll say, the 23 before he was pulled down there by two or three goal defenders. It's first and 10, about 20 yards in from the far side of the field. First and 10 is Bye standing back on his own 15. Single wing to the right. Very deep formation. Bye way back at least 7 yards behind the ball. There comes to the fullback. Straight in he goes. It's Bill Elliott. And maybe picks up 3 yards up to perhaps the 26-yard line on a straight over the center line buck with Bill Elliott, the fullback for the Maroons, carrying that ball. That puts it on about the 26.5-yard line. Second and 6. 4-yard gain straight over center. DeLego in there to make the tackle. Out of the huddle now once again. Bye back. Single wing to the right. There's the ball snapped back to Johnson. This is going to be a fake reverse. He drives through the center of the line. It goes to Elliott. Not Johnson. And he stopped right on the line of scrimmage by DeLego and Hendrickson, the two guards for the goals. Third and 6. There's no gain on that first play. The ball was snapped back to Elliott, the fullback. He faked it. To Hoskin coming around on a fake reverse, then took the ball, drove straight to the center of the line, and we have an injury on the field. A gold man down. We can't see yet who it is. It may be DeLego. Krzyzewski is injured. Number 1, Simmons now in at tackle for the goals. The first injury, he doesn't seem to be hurt too much. Walking off the field under his own power with trainer Boyce helping him. Trainer Lloyd Stein over here on this side of the field. It's 3rd and 6. The Maroons again in a single wing to the right. By in the tailback spot. There it comes straight back, and it's a reverse and a fumble. And we believe recovered. Well, we won't call that yet. We'll let the referee, George Rennick, down there on the pile. I think it was recovered by the Maroons, however. Yes, there's a Maroon man down on the ball. And they recover their own fumble. The first fumble so far of the afternoon. Hoskin recovered the fumble, and it was Elliott who dropped that ball. 4th down and 8, 2-yard gain in 3 plays from the scrimmage. It's Bye standing back on his own 15-yard line, going to punt to the close end of the field. Down here in safety position, Ralph McAllister and Glenn Pullins. There's the kick, almost blocked as 2 gold men come in. It's coming down, bounces on the 35, is let roll way down to the 25, then almost to the 20, and 2 maroon players down there letting it roll. We see a red flag, however, down on the 15-yard line, as there's been an infraction of the rules. The referee calls it, and we'll see just what it is. Beersdorf, Ken Beersdorf, last year's fullback, going in at right half for the Maroons. Number 3, Walt Hoskin, coming out. And we see the two teams and the referee running back up to the flag. So evidently, the penalty was against the goals. The Maroons deciding that they'll take that 5 yards and another try for a kick. We've had no indication yet as to what that penalty will be, but it's a 15-yard penalty, we believe. Roughing the kicker. A penalty roughing the kicker, giving the salute. And it is a 15-yard penalty for roughing the kicker. Billy Mai got the kick away, but the two defenders came in, knocked him to the ground, and referee George Rennick said, that's too rough, boys. 15 yards. So it's 1st and 10 from the 40-yard line. Single wing to the right. The ball comes back to the fullback. He hands it over to Beersdorf, and he smeared way back on the 33-yard line as number 54, Stuhlman, comes in from his right-hand spot and pulls him down for a loss of about 6 yards. You can hear the crowd on that one. They really liked it. That's the kind of defensive play we like to see. He drove in, took those blockers out of the way, and pulled down Mr. Beersdorf on the 33-yard line. Beersdorf out, and Hoskin back in. It's Hoskin at right half. Ken Beersdorf has just come out of the game. Single wing to the right. Bye standing his own 25. Snap comes back to Bye. It's going to be a pass. There it goes. It's complete to Hoskin, but he's pulled down on the 35 for, we believe, no gain. From Bye to Hoskin, and he's pulled down just after catching that ball by Jim Malosky from his quarterback position backing up the line. 3rd and 15. They picked up about 1 yard on that play. The ball resting now right on the 35-yard line, 20 yards in from the far side of the field. As you know, that yardage that the ball is brought in from the inside when it goes out of bounds has been increased this year to 18 yards instead of the old 15, so they have a little bit more room to maneuver. Single wing to the right, comes back to Bye. It's a kick, a nice quick kick coming down, lands on the 33, still going down toward the goal line. There's a Maroon man way down after it, and he downs the ball on the 6-yard line. A beautiful kick by Billy Bye caught Glenn Pullins by surprise, and it will be the goals ball, 1st and 10 from the 6-yard line. Let's see what the referee is going to do with the ball. We see Ken Beersdorf coming back into the game for the Maroons. Walt Hoskin coming out. By Soltaw, Gordy Soltaw.
playing left end for the Maroons. And I believe it's going to be brought back out to the 20-yard line, the rule stating that the ball cannot be downed within the opponent's 10-yard line. It must roll dead, or else it is brought back out as an automatic touchback and put in play on the 20-yard line. So that's the case. Had the ball rolled dead with no one touching it on the 6, it would have been put in play there. However, it's going to be 1st and 10 for the goals, the first time they've had the ball in this quarter. Single wing to the right. The ball comes to the fullback, Don Johnson. He drives up to the 20, and that's about all, as the center of that maroon line, Nomalini and Holker, converge on him and pull him down for perhaps a one-yard gain. Remember, it's McAllister at left half, Glenn Pullins at right, and Don Johnson at fullback for the goals. And running the team out there is Jim Molaski. 2nd and 9, the ball directly in the center of the field. Single wing to the right again, Molaski in the tailback, waiting for the snap from center. Here comes, come back to McAllister. He comes off tackle, driving up very nicely, picks up 5-6 yards up to the 26-yard line as a hole opens there between the left end and left tackle. And it will be 3rd and about 5. We have a substitution, number 33, Frank Brown, former Marshall High School player, now in at left half for the goals. It's 3rd and 4 according to the scoreboard. Single wing to the right again. Frank Brown, the tailback. Defense playing a 6-2-2-1. Here comes back to Brown once again. He drives in, finds a hole, comes up to the 30, and is pulled down once again. By in there on the play. Also Beersdorf and number 70. Bill Thiel up there to make the tackle, but there is a horn on the play. Let's see who that penalty is against. Still waiting. We believe it is going to be against the Maroons. He's talking to the goal captain out there. And the penalty is Maroons offside. So the goals have a first down, which is the first down for the goals this afternoon. Jim Molaski walking back into his huddle to call a play. 1st and 10, the ball resting 18 yards in from this side of the field. Single wing to the right, Frank Brown in the tailback. It goes, looks like an offside, but maybe not. It goes to Pullins. He comes up, drives up to the 36-yard line, picking his hole very nicely. He certainly shows speed out there once he gets his hands on the ball. He didn't have too much blocking. There was a hole in the line, but nothing beyond that. 2nd and 6. 2nd and 6 is Pullins picked up 4 yards on that weak side reverse. He takes the ball from Frank Brown or Don Johnson, the fullback on that play. Streaks toward the left side of the field, then cuts up between the defensive right end and right tackle. 2nd and 6, the ball on this side of the field. Single wing to the right. Once again, Frank Brown in the tailback position. Comes back to the fullback, Johnson. He drives in, falls, and gets up to perhaps the 39-yard line for a gain of 3 yards before he's pulled down by Hooker and Bill Carroll of the Maroons. It's 3rd and 3. Not much wind. They may pull a pass here. They need 3 yards, but again, a line plunge may do it. Let's see what Jim Molaski is going to call. It's the first year you know that Jim has been doing any signal calling. Last year, he played from the fullback position. Once again, single wing to the right. Defense 6-2-2-1, playing up very close. Here it comes back to Frank Brown. He drives through. He's not going to make it. Perhaps he is. He gets up to maybe the 43-yard line as he drove up there after he was tackled by Carroll and Holker. He may have gotten to the 43. It looks like the referee, though, is standing on about the 42-yard line. Maybe a little more, and they're going to measure it. A man injured out there. Trainer Lloyd Stein running out. Maroon man on his knees on the 39-yard line. All right, here comes the yardsticks out. This may be a first down. It may not. He's very close. It is a first down as Frank Brown drove hard for that extra yard and picked up a first down for the goals. So now it'll be 1st and 10 from the goal, 43-yard line, going toward Cook Hall, which is the west end. We have Bob Rotman for the Maroons coming out injured on that last play. Single wing to the right once again. The goal is taking the ball. There's a reverse. Goes to Pullins. He fumbles. He's not going to get it. And the Maroon man is falling on that ball way back there. Number 63, Gordy Soltaud, driving in very nicely. Picks up that ball, which as we see, number 3, Walt Hoskin, coming into the ball game. There's a break. A reverse, supposedly, from Don Johnson to Glenn Pullins. Pullins fumbles the ball. It rolls way back to the 26-yard line where Gordy Soltaud, playing a very nice game for the Maroons from left end, comes in, finally dives on that ball on the 25 and one-half yard line. So there's a break. The Maroons down in scoring territory for the first time. Single wing to the right. By standing way back on the 34-yard line. It comes back to the fullback, Elliott. He drives through, coming up very nicely up to the 24 and the 20, 19 on about the 17-yard line. He's pulled down by Jim Malosky and Glenn Pullins. 8 yards he made on that one. Bill Elliott driving through between his own right guard and right tackle. Picks up 8 yards.